people told me I couldn't do a lot of things.
I feel like I'm the chosen one.
Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. All we are is proud and passionate. I love Toronto. I love this team. And we're going to the NBA Finals. Let's go!
Nothing matters but winning.
Welcome back to episode 76 of Rapsville Weekly. I'm your co-host, Gabriel Chelio, alongside
Adam Kasucci.
Today, we're covering a couple different topics here. We're going to talk a little bit about March Madness, plus the Raptors games, some fun stuff happened, and some sad stuff here in terms of our performance. But before we get into that, as always, please like and subscribe. Check us out on Instagram, at Rapsville, for NBA news, Raptors content, and leave your comments down below. All right, so we're going to start off with March Madness. We haven't covered it too much, obviously. It's not our thing, really. We talk more about the NBA. But these players, some of these guys that we're seeing in the tournament, they could be coming up at lottery picks and stuff. So it's worthy of talking about. Saturday, April 3rd, it was that the semis, basically semifinals. And Baylor easily dismantled Houston, 78-59. So they moved their way to the finals. And we all kind of figured that was going to happen. Baylor have a really strong team. But UCLA has been sneaking in as the dark horse, ranked 11th. And Gonzaga being number one, undefeated season. For some reason, this game was super close. Me and Adam were watching. It was back and forth for like a large part of the game. I believe there was like 19 lead changes. And it was just very tight. In terms of performances, I mean, UCLA, they kind of go through one main star. Adam?
Yeah, Johnny Juzang. He wasn't on the NBA mock draft to start. Currently right now. And I think he will be on there. And the NBA mock draft is basically the first and second round, so the top 60 players who are projected to be in the NBA draft. So I do think he's going to make his way into that just from scoring, scoring at all angles, basically. Difficult shots. He can shoot the three ball really well. Playmaking. He's a decent size. He's coming in at 6'6", 210, so he already kind of has a bit of weight already as well as height. Coming into the league, and he's a guard, so he could dribble the ball. He was playing point guard sometimes when Campbell was off the floor. And, he did a great job. He was really the guy for UCLA to really keep them in the game with 29 points, 6 rebounds, shot 12 for 18, and really played good in the clutch as well. He did score the tying bucket, which kind of led them to a tie, but then something happened after. Gabe, I'll let you handle it.
Yeah, so he basically, quickly before I get to that, he had a phenomenal performance. He was aggressive, put up great numbers, and he's kind of the focal point of the team there, scoring the ball. They also have a good dynamic, I think, between Campbell, their point guard, and Riley, one of their big men, kind of back and forth them two. And, they did a good job of carrying the team, but, if we go down the play-by-play here, they made it to overtime, and then in overtime, Juzang basically was on an ISO, went to the rack on Kispert, missed a shot, caught his own rebound, put it back up, tied the game, like Adam said, 90-90. With 3.3 seconds left, Jalen Suggs, they had a timeout remaining. They didn't use it. He got it, dribbled down the entire court, half court, threw it up, banked it in, buzzer beater, game winner, Jalen Suggs, showing off his, why he's ranked number three right now, number four, one of those two spots in the draft. He hit the game winner, went crazy, one of the biggest shots probably in, NCAA. History, big bucket, stood on the table, was going crazy with his teammates and stuff, rightfully so, making it to the NCAA final. And right as, me and Adam were kind of a little iffy about him, felt like he wasn't the main star performing. Drew Timmy really was taking over on the inside, leading their, I think he's their top scorer this season. He had 25 points this game, 11 for 15 shooting. Kispert's a great shooter for them. He had 15 points, 5 boards, 5 assists. Ayayi started off really strong, 22.6 boards, 9 for 12 shooting, 2 steals. This whole team performed well, put up good numbers, shot the ball well. I felt like he wasn't so aggressive and dominant in the game, but he had two huge impact plays, a huge block and the game-winning three-pointer from half, chucking it up. So clearly he proved big, and it was very exciting to see him hit that.
Yeah, I really want to see his transition into the NBA, whether or not he can really shoot the ball well, because he's great at slashing. We know that his athleticism is great and his passing is phenomenal. So he has some characteristics that are great already that I think he'll be good at the NBA level. I just think his defense might need some work and his long distance shooting, which they talked about. But yeah, I was kind of bummed. I thought UCLA, should have won this game. They played with a lot of heart. They really played intensely, and I think they should have got the win. I think it was just unlucky that last shot went in. But it is March Madness. You know what happens in March Madness with all the half court buzzer beaters to win the game, and all these unpredictable things happen. So it is college basketball. So I can agree.
Yeah, well said, Adam. Like I agree, UCLA, they didn't go it easy, man. They had heart. They showed true heart. No matter what Gonzaga threw at them, all of those star players, lottery picks that they got, UCLA came right back at them, made just bucket after bucket, played super strong, and they always came back with an answer. Sadly, there was no answer to a final half-court shot, but that ended like that. Gonzaga moved their way to the finals to versus Baylor, and people were excited. Number one versus number one, yeah. Gonzaga with this undefeated record. We all thought it was going to be a duel. Honestly, me and Adam both predicted Baylor to start the game. You know, Gonzaga has all these great stars in their team, but I had a feeling that, you know, Mitchell's been a dog this year, same with Butler. They just play, like, super hard and tough, and I had a feeling they were going to win, but I expected it to be a close game at least. The shocking thing about this one, Adam, right, it was a blowout from the very beginning.
Yeah, it was totally a blowout. I thought Baylor was a better team, and I use this term a lot, having the better team. Just they were very cooperative with their ball movement. Their defense was stellar. They were making it really hard on guys like Drew Timmy, Kispert to get into the lane. Suggs, they really kept quiet until the last 5 minutes, maybe 7 minutes. He kind of went off, but other than that, they kept Gonzaga really quiet. It wasn't even a contest, really, at the end. Gonzaga had a couple spurts, but even out of halftime, Baylor was the one to push the pace, get it going, really to take advantage, increase their lead, you know? So I thought Baylor really deserved to win, and they were the better team tonight.
Yeah, they had some top performers. Jared Butler had 22 points, 3 boards, 7 assists, 6 for 14 shooting. I think he was the player of the tournament. They had Macho Teague, if that's how you pronounce it, 19 points, 8 for 15 shooting. Mitchell, Davion Mitchell, this guy's been a dog. I really liked watching him, 15 points, 6 boards, 5 assists, a steal and a block, kind of putting it together on all sides of the court. And the interesting thing is that their big men were in foul trouble really near the start of the half, and you really thought Timmy was going to take over and dominate, but no one played too crazy. Their top performer was Suggs, 22 points, 3 assists, 8 for 15 shooting, 2 steals. He had 3 turnovers, though, and I felt like he was kind of passive. I didn't see him to be as aggressive. You know, Timmy had 5 turnovers of its own, only 12 points. Kispert only 12. They lacked a little bit of support this game from their team, and it, like you said, Adam, it just wasn't close, and I really expected more from them. I expected, you know, the finals here, you got to go down with a huge fight, and Baylor just played very smart, and the better team won today.
Yeah. I thought also that Gonzaga was really having trouble because they haven't been really tested all season. And the commentators were really bringing that up, having UCLA be their really first kind of test this season. And being so deep in the playoffs already, in this March Madness tournament, it's hard to kind of get tested in your last game. So I guess they were kind of shell-shocked that they were getting tested. They were playing a really hard team, which they shouldn't be. They should have, right from the start, they should have understood that Baylor, obviously, is probably the second-best team in the country. Coming in, and they have a really good defense that can really alter their offense. So I didn't understand the way Gonzaga came out. Their intensity was low. They didn't look like their plays were working in terms of ball movement, and they were taking a little bit of stupid shots, to be honest. A lot of unbalanced shots, not good looks. I know Gonzaga likes to get to the rim, take a lot of layups, and they were kind of getting away from that. And I think that's also because Baylor's inside defense with Flo Thamba, he was a really big presence in there.
Yeah. Okay, so now we're going to get into the two games because there's like quite a bit to talk about in each. So first we have the Raptors versus the Wizards. The Raptors came out with this one 103-101. Okay, so we're going to start there. We got a little bit outscored the first quarter, 28-19. And the second and third were quite close. And pretty much this game, we had a 11-point deficit going into the fourth quarter, which is never nice, but also it's not too far. So it wasn't a huge thing to worry about. And the biggest lead for them, I think Washington had a 19-point lead at one point, but besides that, you know, it was somewhat close. It was within range from what we've seen this year. And the great thing about this game is that we came out strong in the fourth quarter. We outscored them 28-15, being able to come away with this one. And the story of the night here, obviously like the talk of it all, was it came down, we were down by 1 point, about, I would say, like maybe 5 seconds left, something like that, six. They missed a shot. We had a timeout. And instead of call, I think we had two timeouts, actually. And instead of calling either timeout, Trent grabbed the rebound, ran up the court, full court. You know, there was guys in different corners. OG was in the corner. Pascal, far side. I think even Malachi. Mm-hmm. Everyone was waiting. He did a little push off on Neto, who ended up going flying, moved over to the side, and then drained a buzzer beater three. Game winner, Gary Trent Jr. And after 2 weeks of coming to this team, he's already had a career high, the second highest plus minus in NBA history, highest for our franchise. And then the game right after, hitting a buzzer beater for the win. That was absolutely fantastic to see. He went crazy. The whole team went crazy. He was getting hyped up. I can't believe that we're seeing this so soon from him. Just what a phenomenal way to end it. We haven't seen a buzzer beater in a while, especially with, you know, Pascal missing all of these, right?
Yeah, and I do want to credit Nick Nurse for this one. I have given him a lot of criticism really this season and haven't liked his decision-making, but this one, not just because the shot went in, but also because the personnel. He sees that Trent rebounded it. He's coming in with speed from half court. Instead of calling a timeout and having to draw up another play, probably give it to Siakam, which is already an iffy situation right now and a bit of tension, I guess, for a lot of people. He lets it run. He lets Trent go with the ball. He was playing decent throughout the game, but we do know that Trent is a very good shot maker and he's very good at creating his own space. So what he did was kind of a behind the back kind of sidestep, and Raul Neto kind of got into his grill a bit and Trent kind of pushed him away. But it wasn't a big push or anything. It was really just like, just get out of my way type of thing. And Neto kind of overreacted. He got upset at the end of the game and thought that it should have been an offensive foul. But Trent did hit it. He hit a deep three, kind of moving off balance. And I think it was honestly a great shot. I think Trent's the guy that we move forward with here, closing games and kind of running plays for. And I totally think that if we did call timeout, the Wizards would have obviously set their defense. They would have put their best defenders in the game, which would have made it much tougher for us to score.
Yeah, that's a great point there. Definitely the defense come into play there. We had a couple guys open on the wings, and it was a good shot. He ended up being wide open. And also about this game, that there was no Rodney Hood, there was no Kyle Lowry, and no Fred VanVleet, no Patrick McCaw. So we were without quite a few guys here. Before we talk about the offense too much, there wasn't a lot of options to be closers there. You got Pascal, who's been taking them but missing them, maybe OG, and then you got Trent, a new guy hasn't closed out, taking too many of those final shots. I think it was a great opportunity for him with little roster. You might as well, and he, like you said, he's a great shot creator. He can make space for himself, and he makes tough shots. Sometimes he takes bad shots when they're leaning and contested, but he has the ability to make those leaning shots, unlike a lot of players on our team. So I think a shot like that was fantastic for him, and I was very, very, very happy that he clutched it out because I love watching him play so far. So I was ecstatic about that.
So we both go with him as the closing role moving forward, you think?
For now, I think that he can be a solid closer for us. You know, we've been looking away from Fred and Kyle, I think, because of, like, height. Depends on the defender they're on. Trent provides you with the height and the skill to ISO. I think that it could be a good look for him.
Yep, and I really agree with that because I think he could also get to the rim too. I feel like he's a decent finisher at the rim for a guard. So if he can shoot the ball and they're really worried about his shooting and he could get to the rim, and it could really make a play at the end. And that's what we've seen, obviously, with the game winner being a shot, but who knows, maybe Nurse run something with him getting to the rim and trying to get him a basket inside.
Yeah, so Trent ended up with 16 points, 2 boards, 2 assists, 7 for 15 shooting, solid numbers. Boucher also starting, 8 points, 5 boards, 2 steals, 3 blocks, but struggled to shoot, man. 3 for 12, 1 for 7 from 3. Ananobi contributed well, 14 points, 6 boards, 6 for 17 shooting. Bembry, 15, 7 and 5, 7 for 10, a steal and a block. I thought that was a great contribution from Bembry. Haven't seen, you know, too much from him, but now the opportunity of guys sitting, getting him back in the starting lineup, he seems to be more aggressive in his attacks to the rim, and I feel like that's helped him score.
I totally agree. Bembry has been playing amazing, and he's really stepped up, really filling in for Lowry and Fred. I think that's a huge role to kind of take on, and even though he really considers himself a secondary ball handler, he's doing it really good. He's not turning over the ball a lot. he's making plays. He has enough playmaking ability to really take that role. And he's doing other stuff as well, rebounding, scoring. So he's really giving you kind of everything from that position. And I really think that that's a great asset that Nurse can use.
Yeah. So Siakam as well, 22-5-3, two steals and a block. You know, solid night from him, 10-for-16 shooting. We're positive there. 0-for-4-3, you know, we've been talking about that three ball. I don't think that he should be shooting those as often. Malachi Flynn, once again, tying his career high, 16 points, you know, back-to-back games, 16 points in 23 minutes, 6 boards, 4 assists, 6-for-13 shooting, 4 steals and 3 blocks. Honestly, fantastic defensive effort from him. And then even Baines contributing 10 points and 8 boards, 4-for-9 shooting in about 20 minutes. You know, solid from them. But Watanabe, Stanley Johnson, the other two guys that got pretty valuable minutes, 17 and 12 minutes respectively, only had 2 points from Watanabe, 3 boards, 2 assists, and then Johnson, 3 boards, 2 assists. A steal for both of them, but not much in the points department there. And then Washington, pretty much Westbrook, 23-14-11. Talk of the town for his stat line, but he had 9-for-25 shooting, and I think he single-handedly cost him the game at the end for the amount of shots that he was taking. It reminded me of John Wall with Houston, how he was one of the only guys that shot bad on when we versed them, because like he's kind of playing with guys that are, you know, lower skilled players. He's taking a lot of shots, and a lot of them were bad shots. So Westbrook was missing quite a bit, and I think that affected his team's performance because they started going on a bad run. But besides him, you know, Matthews had 17. He was a good shooter for them, 4-for-6 from 3. And then Bertans, 17 as well, 5-for-8 from 3.
Yeah, really coming into this game, the first couple quarters, I thought it was honestly going to be a blowout. The Washington shooters were really hitting it. Bertans hitting a lot of threes, Matthews hitting a lot of threes. And then down the stretch, I think Russell wanted to take over the game. They were up by a lot as well. They were up by double digits, and Westbrook, he's been known for making poor decisions late in games. And that's why his teams that he's been on haven't, I wouldn't say won a lot, but they haven't really excelled late in games. And his shot selection was just horrible. He was taking a lot of deep shots, a lot of threes over and over again, and just missing the same shots. And being Russell Westbrook, you have such an arsenal and you're such a threat going to the basket, drawing fouls. You can make plays for other people. I thought he just needed to do what he was doing at the beginning of the game, getting to the rim. Really, if you're going to get to the rim, he's drawing two guys. And then, cause we're so worried about him, and he's kicking out to shooters and they're hitting the shots, doing their specialty, right? So I think that was a bit selfish of him to just take a bunch of shots and just keep on shooting them. They were even contested. Like, they weren't even wide open. So I thought that was pretty bad. And Pascal, I didn't think he had a great second half either. He finished the first half with 18 points and ended with 22. And he also had 3 assists. So he wasn't doing too much of the playmaking role. So the second half of games, I know Pascal, his efficiency drops. He hasn't played to the best of his ability in the second half. I noticed right off the gate, Pascal comes off with a lot of energy, tries to get to the rim, is more quick in his moves, very decisive, aggressive. But as the game goes on, he kind of falters, and I've seen that be a pattern, and I think he's really got to clean that up. Flynn, it was honestly, like you said, Gabe, that was a great game from him defensively and offensively, and it's really important for a guy like him to really string together consistent games, because if he had a bad game in this one, after having such a good last one, I think it really would have hurt his confidence. So it's good for him to kind of string together good games. And then my last point I kind of wanted to bring up was Watanabe and Johnson. Like, there's a fine line between playing a team game and doing really well in the plus minus and actually producing on the floor. And I think they've been doing a decent job at kind of the plus minus, kind of being team players, going in as really defenders as their specialty. So really not being asked to do much offensively, but they're really hurting the offense. Like 2 points in 17 minutes, 12 minutes and you're getting 0 points. Like, I just feel like there could be replacements in that position moving forward. And Masai really needs to take a look at timeout.
Yeah, right now we seem to be struggling on size, usually with rebounding and stuff. So, you know, I don't see them going anywhere just yet because we lack of finding a big man, apparently. But I agree, you know, that there should be more offensive production coming from those guys. They are just very trapped in their role of playing their role, and they don't get aggressive. They kind of depend on how the game rolls. You know, when other guys are stepping up, they're okay with taking the back seat. Like Malachi was very hot. So off the bench, their bench unit, it was simple. Give the ball to Malachi, let him create for himself or in a pick and roll with like Baines or Boucher or something. And then everyone else stand a post and they kind of just sit in the corner. So at times when it, when the someone's hot, it's all right. But it's also been like every game we've seen this type of thing where they just don't really contribute too much in the offensive end. So at some point, you know, there is a need to fill that role and try getting a better offensive flow with all five of your players. And like you said, Malachi obviously has been consistent so the past two games, so it was good to see him get a little warmer. He looked very confident, kind of his G League self, taking, you know, a lot of more shots and being aggressive with his drives, getting on the ISO or the pick and roll, getting more aggressive with the midi and stuff. I like this side of him, seeing him be more aggressive. It's just hard when he hits like one of those slumps where he can't score. Like in other games, it's not the best, but this game, obviously, it proved to be, you know, a good scoring asset for him working that pick and roll. And then Siakam, like you said, the consistency obviously is, you know, tough for him in the second half. I think he just needs to find a way to get, you know, a second burst out of him. It seems to be like that falter, like you said. And, you know, most players, obviously, they're starting fresh, but he's got to find a way to get that second half, drive the momentum back up because you have such a long break there.
Yeah, and if Nick Nurse is going to continue to use Siakam instead of Trent as the closer, we're really going to need that in that second half, you know what I mean?
Yep. All right, now game two of the back-to-back, Los Angeles Lakers versus Toronto Raptors. This one ended 110-101 Lakers. Looks pretty close, but let's not, we don't want to deceive you here. If you watch the game, you know that it wasn't really close. The end was basically the Lakers just holding it out, wasting time, and trying to close the game out. Really, this game was a blowout from the very beginning. First quarter, 40-28. We already started off rough, and they were starting off hot. They were shooting the three ball incredibly. You know, even by the end of this game, they shot 45% from three, 18 for 40. We shot 15%, 5 out of 33. That's not normal for us. Obviously, missing 2 3-point shooters, Kyle and Fred, but still horrible. And then even field goal percentage, you know, 49% versus 40. We struggled there. The rebounds somehow ended up somewhat close, 49-42. But there was a large point in that game where they had pretty much double the rebounds or a large amount more than us. The assists were greater for them, 29-17. They had a really just dominant game. This Los Angeles Lakers team, without Drummond, without LeBron, without Anthony Davis, moved the ball well, took good shots, made their shots, took over these matchups, shooting over defenders and stuff. People were confident on their team that I didn't really expect to be that confident. You know, like the Markieff Morrises who put up 15 points and 9 boards. Caruso, 13, 5 and 4. Horton Tucker, 17, 4 and 6. Gasol, 13, 9 and 5 against Boucher at the start. 4 blocks on the night. A lot of these guys really confident in their game, attacking one-on-one and stuff. And they just looked like a very solid team tonight, and us quite the opposite.
Yeah, our ball movement wasn't the best. There was really no flow in the offense. We were very slow, a lot of stagnant play, and then it would result into an ISO at the end of the possession, which would end in like a leaning shot or a very difficult shot that we would miss. And there was a lot of difficult scenarios here in this one. I thought Aaron Baines should have got more minutes. He got 9 points, 6 rebounds in 12 minutes. That's very efficient on 4 or 5 shooting. And that's really his role in the team and really to be an anchor in the paint. And I don't understand why Nurse is not playing him if he's doing his role. Like, I thought he should have gone way more minutes than 12. We needed a big man. Our defensive rebounding was horrific. And Boucher was doing his job on offense. 19 points, 8 rebounds, a steal. But defensively, it's just such a mismatch. If you got a guy like Marcus Gasol, who really feeds off of smaller centers. He wants to have a smaller center so he can make his passing more effective, you know? And I thought he really did that with his 5 assists. So I think Nurse really needs to do some thinking about which matchups he would like to use and which certain personnel he wants to put on certain players.
Yeah, I feel like Baines, going into this, we talked about it. I feel like Baines is like a good solid matchup for Gasol in terms of size, shape, similar role. They both can sit in the paint, do their thing. You know, Boucher, there's a size, you know, there's a little bit of height and a lot of weight on him. in the difference there. So Gasol can work his magic back down, work in the post where he's had more, you know, effectiveness than shooting the three ball, you know, as of the past couple of seasons. So he can work in the paint, make his passes, do what he wants, and not be bothered by a weaker framed Boucher behind him. And then I feel like Boucher could have thrived off the bench with a faster play. Boucher really stepped up, I think, in the second half in terms of scoring. The first half, I think we saw Marc Gasol be more the dominant of the two in the matchup. So that's where I agree with you. I think Baines deserved a lot more minutes this game because of that, and he put up good numbers in his time, played well in his time. So I think that was a little unjust of the lack of minutes. And then other people scoring, Bembry once again had a solid performance. 12-5-3, 5 steals in the night, 5-for-10 shooting. Another night, good shooting, putting up his double-digit points, rebounding and assists, being a part of the game, playing really solid defense. There was a couple plays didn't go our way, some odd mistakes, some non-calls that the refs didn't give us. You know, Bembry got hacked on one of the layups, didn't get the call. Nurse got a technical. Some stuff that didn't go our way with Bembry, but he played hard. I give him credit for that, and his defense has been fantastic past couple of games, filling up the stat sheet very nicely. Trent, 11 points, 3 boards, 2 assists. He kind of struggled tonight, 4-for-15 shooting, can't lie. 1-for-6, didn't shoot the best, took some bad shots. Some calls were questionable and stuff. I thought the refs in general were a little iffy on our end, but there was that. And then Siakam, 27-7-2, 2 steals and a block, 7-for-21 shooting. Adam, the stat line, besides the field goal percentage, looks a little juice, like he had a solid game, but he played 40 minutes, and we saw that most of those minutes came in that fourth quarter where, you know, the Lakers were relaxed, and he got to the line a bunch of times, and even when we were up 25, Nurse didn't want to take him off.
Yeah, he was like 3-for-15 to start the game, and that's where really the game collapsed. He should be the best player on the floor. When you look at both teams, and with Drummond, LeBron, AD out, Fred out, Lowry out, he should be the main guy. He should be dominating and shooting an efficient percentage, at least. He ended off with 33%, but it should have been much lower. Like, yeah, like you said, Gabe, Nurse didn't take him off like he did with the other starters, Trent, Bembry, Boucher. He kind of kept him in. So, and that's why he kind of got his 27 points. And if you look at the stat sheet, you say, oh, he got 27. He was the guy who was really playing well for the Raptors. That's not the case here. He really struggled throughout the game, turning it over, making some bad passes. And, he just didn't really set up his teammates, not playmaking well. And it's becoming an issue. He should be the best player on the floor this game, and he's really got to clean that up, man.
Yeah, so you mentioned it a little bit before, and I was going to mention it during the Washington game, but I thought now it was a good time there. The offensive structure has just been horrible. And Siakam here, you know, without Fred and Kyle, you lose a lot of the chemistry in the team, the playmaking, running the offense and stuff. And then Siakam taking it over, it tended to be feed him in the post. Like we've seen, we've seen it before with Fred and Kyle on the floor, feed him in the post, work around him. But with the team we have now, with all these guys that aren't shooting the ball well, it's such a stagnant offense that it goes absolutely nowhere, resulted in bad passes, miscommunications, and a lack of scoring. And I think this game, last game we got lucky. We had a solid closeout with ISO drives and the buzzer beater. But both games, there's just no structure, too stagnant of an offense, no real plays, a lot of ISO ball. And there's a reason that we started off horribly in both games, and we got lucky we came out of one of them, but this one was clear we didn't deserve to come out of it because we just didn't play well. We didn't get good looks. We weren't making shots. We weren't playing solid defense. We just looked like a horrible team out there because there was no real flow in the offense.
No, I totally think that's right. And I also wanted to talk about OG Anunoby and his ejection. He kind of came down. It was a fast break. Schroeder kind of hit him in the arm, and they kind of got tangled up, which is normal. Usually the defender wants to make a hard foul, making sure the other player doesn't get the N1. So I kind of understand. So they kind of got tangled up, and then OG kind of was holding his leg awkwardly, and then I think either he released or pressed up, and it kind of made Schroeder fall a bit. And it was kind of a weird play, and Schroeder kind of flipped, and I think he over-exaggerated a little bit. And kind of went back into OG's face. He was really pissed off. Then Montrezl Harrell started getting involved, and Trent was trying to break it up. And so the end result there, I thought the reffing was way too soft there in terms of the call. They did call 2 ejections. So OG got ejected, and Montrezl Harrell got ejected. I think Montrezl was for talking, and OG, I guess, for the flip. But I thought the refing crew was also horrible this game. A lot of calls not being called for the Raptors. A lot of hard drives just missed. And then for the Lakers, I feel like every time you touch them and you play a handsy defense, every time it's a call. So the consistency, I think, with this refing crew was honestly off, and it made dividends in the end. Yeah,
that's what I was mentioning before, that refing crew was questionable. And like you said, we've seen it obviously before, the type of play where a guy goes up in the air, you want to just grab him and pull him out of the air so he doesn't even have a chance of making it, and you kind of hold on so the person doesn't obviously land on their head or anything, gets injured. So Shorter tried doing that, but when he was doing that, OG, like, I guess instinctively used his left arm to hook around Schroeder's left leg and had this weird tumble for about a couple feet. And then eventually when OG caught himself, he still had that arm wrapped. And for some reason, when he got up, he kept the arm wrapped for way too long in it, and he just moved Schroeder and flipped them over. And I don't know, like you said, if it was an embellishment, but it was very weird that OG did that and pulled that much. Obviously him falling, right away, Harrell ran in and pushed Trent, and Trent immediately, was holding him back along with the refs. And then Schroeder jumped up super quickly and aggressively. Trent pushed him back as well and was trying to separate it. It was weird. I get the ejection. We see it sometimes for these type of plays. Like, OG, it didn't look like it made too much sense why he flipped them. And Harrell, I get, jumping in. But like you said, there was other calls, I think, in the game that were also questionable. So I think it's reasonable to say the reffing crew here was a little off. But one thing I like about this is, even though we lost, I think the best thing I took out of this game, for real, was this moment, seeing how Trent was so quick to defend his new teammate, OG Anunoby, who we've been talking about. They've been forming this new friendship, but it's only been 2 weeks, man, and I love how Trent's already taking on this as his brotherhood, and he's willing to fight for his team already and protect them. The minute that Schroeder jumps up already, he literally stands in front of OG and, gets ready to protect him. I thought it was really cool to see, really brotherly.
Yeah, I think that's what teammates are honestly all about. And I think Trent was really the example of that there. And then our bench unit tonight, Gabe, what did you think of that, man?
So compared to obviously the Lakers had a phenomenal bench unit in Talen Horton-Tucker, Caruso. They basically did a great job of carrying them. And our bench unit really struggled. I think Flynn had a good performance. It was pretty solid, last game was a little bit better in terms of the efficiency and the points per minute type thing, but this game had 11 points, 8 boards, 4 assists, 4 for 11 shooting, 2 steals and a block. Kind of strived a little bit more near the end when, like I said, Lakers kind of pulled it back and relaxed. But Johnson, Watanabe, again, they didn't have the huge amount of production. Watanabe picked up a couple points near the end off of some putbacks, but they didn't make their open threes when they were kicked out to. They didn't actually make those contributing buckets during those minutes, and they did get a lot more minutes. Johnson 26, that quite a bit there, and then Watanabe 19, not enough from them as well, obviously. And then obviously, losing OG, already not having these guys, we were severely undermanned. We needed a big performance from the bench unit, and it wasn't as big as it needed to be.
Yep, with all the guys injured, it really hurt us, and
so we should have came out with this one as a win. It's a winnable game, very injured team, kind of like the OKC game. And we're stuck in the weird limbo phase again. We're not in the 10th seed, so we're not headed for a playoffs anytime soon. We're a game and a half behind Chicago. And then overall, now that we've lost the game, we might fall below OKC, depends how they do tomorrow. But we're in the weird spot, man, where we don't have the best draft pick. We're not in the playoffs, and we seem to just win a game, lose a game. We got to find these stretches where we can keep winning, or if we end up losing, at least let it be in bunches, and maybe we can hit a better draft stock. It just seems weird that we're stuck in this limbo phase of win one, lose one. It's really a bad situation.
I think we got to just try to win every game. I know the team right now isn't playing the best, and we're trying to get off to a winning streak, and it just never seems to happen. We win a couple and then back a loss. We can't just kind of get on that continuity of winning games. And it's been very difficult. But I totally think that we just got to keep trying, keep going for it. I mean, the 10th seed isn't far away, Chicago, and we're only 1.5 games behind them. So I totally think it's reachable. But if we do fall short in the end, like you said, the 11th seed is the worst spot to be in, because you do kind of get the shittier draft pick, not as high, and then you also don't make the playoffs. So you kind of get the worst of both worlds, and that would kind of suck for Raptors fans.
Yeah, And we're going to sign out soon here, but I guess the biggest game is going to be next game, because we do verse the Chicago Bulls on Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, be ready for that one. If we win this one, we're making that push for the playoffs, baby. And if we lose it, our odds aren't looking as good.
Yep. And let's try to get some guys back, man. Like, a lot of game time decisions. Let's hope these guys fight through these injuries and kind of heal quick. Even Paul Watson with the COVID thing, hope he gets better. You know, we need these guys. We need everyone and as much personnel as we can get, because Nurse needs for sure some options to play.
Yep. All right, that's pretty much it. We hope you enjoyed. Check us out on Instagram at Rapsville for NBA news, Raptors content. We always keep you guys up to date. Tons of content every day and post-game stuff. Please like and subscribe. Leave your comments down below. And let's go Raps. That's us signing out. Peace.